Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, October 9th. With Trump's personal army invading our cities, you may have missed some important public health news earlier this week. No, not the release of the Epstein files. It's the CDC officially adopting the unscientific recommendations from its rigged advisory committee on immunization practices. The recommendations make significant changes to the CDC's long-standing immunization and vaccine schedule for adults and children. The two biggest changes are kids should get their chickenpox vaccine separately and not with the combined vaccine to prevent measles, mumps, and rubella, or German measles. And adults under 65 should no longer get a routine annual booster against COVID-19. That's now up to you and your doctor based on your risk factors. Quote, informed consent is back, close quote, said acting CDC Director Jim O'Neill. More like the Middle Ages are back. O'Neill is the acting director because Trump and HHS Secretary RFK Jr. fired the director because she wouldn't sign off on the changes without any scientific evidence to back them up. Now that should make you feel good. The question is, how will consumers respond to these changes and the overall mistrust in immunizations and vaccines being sown by the anti-vax movement led by RFK Jr.? A new survey of about 2,700 parents by the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Washington Post suggests that we're headed in the wrong direction. Infectious diseases ranked 11th out of 12 on the list of biggest threats to children's health today. The only threat lower was fluoride and local water supplies. The number one threat to children's health was social media. And 16% of parents said they've delayed or skipped some vaccines for their kids. Not counting flu and COVID vaccines, that's about one in six. So how do we stop the slide backwards to the Middle Ages? Well, we had some ideas on our June 5th, 2025 episode of the Roundup, how to stop childhood vaccine rates from dropping. So without further delay, please enjoy a rebroadcast of our June 5th show featuring Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. It is Thursday, June 5th. Tomorrow, June 6th, is the 81st anniversary of the D-Day landing by Allied forces in Normandy, France, that eventually freed Europe and us, by extension, of fascism. I visited Normandy last year after the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Every American should visit if they can. You'll never be the same. It makes what's happening in this country right now even more shameful. Adding to that shame is the anti-vaccine movement. That's what we're going to talk about on today's show, thanks to a new study on vaccine rates. Researchers from Johns Hopkins did the study, which came out Monday in JAMA. They looked at MMR vaccine rates in 2,066 counties in 33 states. That's the two-dose vaccine set you get to prevent measles, mumps, and rubella. Rubella is the German measles. You get the first dose when you're about one and the second dose when you're about six. The researchers compared the vaccine rate from the 2017-18 school year before the pandemic with the vaccine rate from the 2023-24 school year after the pandemic. Here's what they found. The county-level average vaccine rate dropped from 93.9% to 91.3%. 78% of the counties reported a drop in their vaccine rate. And the vaccine rate increased in only four of the 33 states, California, Connecticut, Maine, and New York. Not exactly a good report card to bring home to your parents. You'd think vaccine rates would go up after a deadly pandemic. Dave, the study didn't offer any explanations of why. How would you explain it? What's the long-term public health impact? And what can private sector providers do to reverse this trend?
Well, first off, how would I explain the drop in vaccine rates? Have either of you seen the 2006 satirical sci-fi movie Idiocracy that stars Owen Wilson and Maya Rudolph?
I have not.
I have not. No.
Okay. Well, the basic story is there's a guy named Joe who's average in every way. So average Joe. And through a whole host of things, he gets shot 500 years into the future. And society, as it's evolved, rather than getting smarter, gets dumber. So there's famine, dust bowls, over-commercialization. And through, again, lots of twists and turns, Joe becomes president of the United States when he recommends using water instead of Gatorade to irrigate the crops. And suddenly there's food again. In the process, average Joe becomes the world's smartest person. Idiocracy, even though neither of you has seen it, has become a popular cult film like Rocky Horror Picture Show. When I read reports like this, where the MMR vaccine rates are dropping fairly precipitously, I feel like we're living in a real life version of Idiocracy. It's truly scary. Dave, your second question asks about the long-term public health impact. It's horrible. We had eliminated measles by the turn of the millennium in this country, zero cases because of vaccines, and now measles is back with a vengeance. Really scary. Satire is fun. Idiocracy is fun. But it's not a constructive answer to the question of why this is happening. So here's what I think is going on. Among the deepest human needs is belonging, to be an accepted member of one's community. This human need is so strong that belonging trumps beliefs. See what I did there, by the way? Mm-hmm. In a nation that's as polarized as the United States right now, individuals decide whether they want to be on the red team or the blue team and then adopt that team's views, no matter how illogical they are. So down deep, the anti-vax ideology and the decline in childhood vaccinations speaks to ideology, not science. Governor Pritzker of Illinois last week gave a speech where he said the smartest people he knew were also the kindest, noting it takes intelligence and effort to overcome natural impulses to regard those who are different from us with compassion and with understanding. Very, very powerful message. Kindness ultimately wins. So your last question regarding what providers can do to reverse the anti-vaccine trend, Dave, they have to show up. Providers have to show up. They have to keep making the pro-vaccine case until they're tired of hearing themselves speak. And they have to exercise extraordinary self-control and avoid demonizing those with wrong-headed beliefs. I don't think there's any alternative path, and whatever progress we make will be incremental.
That last point for providers is a really tough one, right? Not to get angry at your patients who share a different view. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Yes, Dave. What are we going to do, if anything, ever, to normalize vaccines again?
Well, the first thing we should do is get Elon Musk to endorse MMR vaccine. You know, after all, he's got 14 kids.
Influencer.
Yeah. And he doesn't seem to mind going against the crowd. So maybe he can be a constructive force for social change. I know I just spoke about kindness and how essential it is to moving our society forward. But we also need to call out BS loudly, consistently, and eloquently. Mistruths and lies cannot stand uncontested, but it can't stop there. My Pollyannish belief is that if we can fix the U.S. healthcare system, which is hard but doable, we can begin to get healthier together, get our mojo back, become more united, and tackle the massive societal changes that lie before us. As that happens, we'll become purple rather than red or blue. We'll be on one team. And we'll start talking to rather than at one another. So let's fix healthcare and then fix the rest of the country and in the process fix ourselves.
And that's the path forward. Julie, what do you think is going on? What's the long-term public health impact? And what can the private sector market do to get kids vaccinated?
Well, beyond all the obvious answers, more disease and death and strain on our health system and all that. I don't think I'm hearing people use this term much anymore, but do you remember the term we used like on the daily during COVID called herd immunity?
Yeah.
I had struck that from my vocabulary for a while, but I think about it again because you know, we're going to be eroding herd immunity for some of these diseases, which I think put communities at higher risk than, you know, the average person probably understands. And then I just think about the economic burden of, you know, people being out of work and that affecting social determinant issues that drive health down. So there's a lot of pieces that seem sort of small, but could become like long tail issues, which is not great. And the private sector, I mean, there's so many things the private sector could do, right? They need to do a lot or need to, you know, take action here. The first thing I always think about as a mom is if you have to go to your doctor to get vaccines, like how many parents can't do that? Like we need to take advantage of our infrastructure to have weekend hours, longer hours, pharmacies, clinics, you know, retail clinics. But I look at how technology can be used. You know, if you think about, Dave, you're one medical patient still, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you as a patient have to do the job of making sure that they know your vaccines from the beginning, but then they're keeping track of them and they're reminding you when you need a vaccine. So the nudge behavior, I think, is really powerful in terms of what digital can do. And if you just think about more active use of nudges, like any kind of notification that we get from any other app we ever sign up for, it can be really powerful when it comes to, you know, interacting or integrating with registries being pushed out by payers and providers. And there's some digital health companies that do this today. If you think about like some of the chronic care management companies that have a stickier relationship with their patients, they're pushing out vaccine nudges. But the issue, of course, is that these records are scattered all over the place. And even I go to CVS now and, you know, I have to make sure that that vax gets back to one medical for me. So this brings up for me, you know, the importance of that kind of PHR concept, which of course evolves every decade as we think about what that technology really means. But a patient health record or patient control of those records is important. And you know, when I think about startups, like there are startups now that are looking at registry automation and the power of what you could do with some of these technologies could be amazing. So I don't see why we wouldn't actually try to, as private market solutions, work with, I mean, the problem is who pays for it, right? But we need to build up public health infrastructure and there are ways to do that. I also think, by the way, that you could use all sorts of incentives to incentivize people to stay on vax schedules. Like it doesn't have to just be money. You could really gamify a bunch of stuff around this. I mean, people react to gamification in every other part of their lives, and we don't gamify like the most critical things people need to do for their health. So I, of course, believe that, you know, we need to figure out how to get on top of misinformation and social and, you know, think about, okay, so could influencers like Musk be, you know, be compelling, Dave? Yeah, sure. I just also think there's a lot that, you know, we can do with the technologies we have today that were, if we applied them in slightly different ways, could be really powerful.
Yeah, I was just thinking of what people have hanging on their wall, right? They'll put a baseball schedule from their favorite team. What if you had just a poster, right? Mm-hmm. With every vaccine you're supposed to get from life till death in a little box and the date where you got it, right? I know it's a paper solution. Don't hate me for that. Right.
I was about to comment.
But
on.
It would work for me. It would. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
You know, Julie, that was a fantastic response. And as I was listening to it, I kept wondering, how do we get the anti-vax moms back? Right. That they're such a powerful force for this anti-vaccine movement, in part stirred on by RFK Jr. So I'm wondering if there's a role for private foundations to flood the airwaves with public service messages that really make the case persuasively for vaccines, particularly to those moms. This is something governments usually do. You know, whenever you visit Canada, whenever we do, every third ad on TV is a public health ad. But since we can't count on our government to do the right thing here, can private organizations step up and fill the void? And maybe as importantly, will they fill that void?
So the beginning of your question was a great softball. Is there a role? Absolutely. Will they do it? Oh, I don't know. You know, I think about foundations in a couple of different ways. I mean, if you look at just how foundations function, some are very reactive you know, philanthropists and give as that they see the need or as needs arise. Others like California Healthcare Foundation are much more strategic and think about what is the problem and what are all the levers I can pull to solve that problem, policy, you know, the technology, et cetera. I'd love to think that philanthropies could fill this void. They absolutely could. There's definitely the money to do that. I think some philanthropies can think a lot more creatively than others on who is the consumer really and what do they need to hear? And also, where do they need to hear it and how? It's not just about TV ads anymore. We learned that from Kamala, right? Where are philanthropies going to enter into the podcast world? Where will they enter into, like, let's get really creative with our ads, quote unquote, where those go. Mm-hmm. So I hate to say this, but I think there are some foundations that could absolutely nail it and others that would just waste a lot of money.
You know, my cynicism is in full bloom today. So frankly, I'm not sure we can do anything about it with such a high level of deliberate disinformation out there, combined with a very gullible public with a short memory. At one point, we were averaging more than 3,000 COVID deaths a day. You know, and there were a couple of days where it topped 4,000 during the peak of the pandemic. You know, we were afraid to go outside. Now, if you go in for a COVID booster, people think you're nuts. So wait until the zombie apocalypse. I'm going to be ready. And I'll have my wall poster vaccine schedule with me. Right. It's Dave Berta again, and it's still October 9th. I hope you enjoyed this special rebroadcast of our June 5th episode, How to Stop Childhood Vaccine Rates from Dropping. Both my COVID booster and flu shot are on board. I'm doing my part to improve public health. Are you? If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.